my favorite.
We would like to introduce the first speaker, Scott, with your home group.
Oh, I thought Doug was going first.
All right. Doug, what's your home group?
Hey, Doug, I'm an addict.
What's up, Doug?
My home group's the Washington 2 group and Narcotics Anonymous. We meet on Friday nights at the Church of the Covenant on Bow Street in Washington at 7:30. Come on down and join us. And the topic I've been asked to share on is fear versus faith. And I wanted to tell you that I was at a spiritual retreat last summer, and am I all right here, Chuck? I didn't want to stand behind her, but I will if I must. I was at this spiritual retreat, and I heard my brother Mark sharing, and Mark began to speak about fear versus faith. And he said, suppose you had two puppies, and them puppies was identical. He said, if you had a set of identical puppies, which one would grow up to be the biggest? And he said the answer was the one that you fed the most. And that made sense to me. I got a lot of stuff in me. I got fear in me. I got faith in me. Whichever one is working the most today is the one I feed the most today. And I'm filled with fear. I walked up here. They told me we were supposed to start at 8:45. My wife and I come walking up the path here at 8:45. There was nobody here at all. I got scared. I says, man, they must know I'm speaking. Nobody wants to hear. There's nobody here. We ain't going to get no meeting. And so I was pretty cool for a while there. And then it got to be 9 o'clock and 5 after 9. I'm thinking, nobody's going to show. They're going to cancel the meeting. I was all right. Then I seen the chairperson walk up. The fear returns. This is always a little bit scary to stand up here. But I just wanted to come up and share a little bit of my experience, strength, and hope. My topic is fear versus faith. I always, whenever I get a chance to share, I always tell the same story. I always like to start out with this little story. It's a story about two little boys. I tell this story all the time because I identify so closely with the kids in the story. It said there was two little boys, and they were from a small town, and it said them two little boys was bad. It said one boy was 7, and one boy was 10, and them boys were so bad that any time anything bad happened in the town, their parents automatically knew they was involved because them boys were so bad. And the parents had heard about a new minister who had just come to town who was having great success with disciplining troubled youth. And so they made arrangements for the little boys to go meet with the minister. And the arrangements was the 7-year-old was going to meet with him in the morning and the 10-year-old was going to meet with him at night. And they took the 7-year-old to the church, and they sat him down with the minister, and they left him there. And the minister sat the boy down in his office, and he said to the boy, where is God? And the little boy didn't say a word. So the minister asked him again, where is God? And again, the little boy didn't say a word. So the minister asked him a third time in a real loud voice, where is God? And the little boy jumped up out of the chair and he ran out of the church and he ran all the way home and he ran in his house and he slammed the door and he ran upstairs into his bedroom and he slammed the door and he ran into the closet and he slammed the door and he was hiding in the back of the closet with his hands over his head. And the 10-year-old come looking for him and he said to him, what happened, man? What happened? And the 7-year-old said, we're in big trouble this time, dude. God is missing, and they think we stole him. And I love that story. I love that story because by the time I was 7 years old, I was already a liar. And I was a cheat. And I was a thief. And I was an outlaw. And I was a rebel. And I was scared. I've been thinking just a little bit today about this topic. I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time getting up in my head. I really wasn't trying to be, you know, like prepare or plan what I was going to say. I was trying to pray and let God speak through me. But one of the thoughts that went through my mind today, as I was listening even to Alexander share some stuff about his childhood. I was recalling a time I might have been five, I might have been six, I might have been seven. I remember that I was about knee-high to my father. And I remember I heard somebody use the word stupid. And I looked at my father and I said, "You're stupid." And I remember him whacking the shit out of me for that. And I didn't understand why he whacked me, because I didn't know what the word meant. And I was just a bad child. And I remember my father kicking me with his boots. And I remember my father beating me with boards. And I remember my father throwing me down the stairs. And it wasn't until I came in to rehab and talked about some of these things that I came to discover that the problem wasn't me. The problem was my dad. Didn't know. He didn't know better. And he abused me, and it wasn't my fault. See, I was always screwed up. I thought it was my fault. I was afraid of my father from the time I was knee-high. Scared of my dad. Just like Alexander said, I lied to him. I'd break stuff. I'd go places I wasn't supposed to go. I'd steal stuff and I'd lie about it. And he would whoop me. And I grew up scared. And then when I got to be about a teenager, maybe before that, I discovered the effects of booze. And I discovered the effects of pot. And I was on my way. And I used every day for almost 30 years trying to cover up that fear. Trying to not have to deal with life. Trying to not have to deal with reality. Trying to not have to deal with low self-esteem issues. Am I good enough? My sister's highly successful. I could never live up to her. My mother loved my dad, and she didn't know how to handle him. I could never fit in. It was always messed up. And so I used. They told me when I got to rehab that when I put the drug down, that maturity-wise, I'm at about the same age as I am when I picked the drug up. And I understand what they're talking about. I'm like a little kid running around in an adult body. And I'm just trying to figure out how to live. And when I got here to the program and you guys began to talk about fear, I sat there and shook my head. I said, I'm not afraid of anything. I didn't understand what fear meant. Now, I didn't look it up in a dictionary. Maybe I should have. I don't know what the dictionary definition of fear is. I know that a lot of things that I used to do that I thought were fearless was actually just plain stupid. I used to give my money to people I didn't know and hope that they'd bring me back what I wanted. And then if they didn't, I'd give them more. And I used to go into neighborhoods where I had no business going. And I used to think that stuff was fearless. And I used to use in such a manner that every pit was dangerous. Some people died. I didn't know. Didn't know how to stop once I got started. Used way too much for way too long, thinking I was fearless. And I come into the room and you guys were talking about fear, and I didn't know what you were talking about. I just didn't know. I had to be here for a little while before I understood what fear was. And what happened for me, I went to rehab right down the road in Twin Lakes, and they told me when I left there, they said, don't go home. He says, you should go to the Washington City Mission. They say, you need to change people, places, things. Well, what happened for me was I went to jail. I went home. I got high. I went to Twin Lakes. I went home. I got high. I went to jail a second time. I went home. I got high. I went to jail the third time. I didn't go home. I haven't gotten high since. So the third time I went to jail, I got out. I went to the Washington City Mission. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the end of the road for me. What happened was when I got out of Twin Lakes, I knew everything. I knew it all. I had worked all 12 steps. I knew the program, and I was ready to say anybody would ask, I was going to tell you how to be okay. And so I got about 30 days, and somebody had called me up and asked me to hook them up. And I said, well, I don't use anymore, but I'll be glad to hook you up. And so I took some money from them, and I went to the dope man's house. And my intentions was just to take some money and not some dope. But I took some money, and then I seen the dope, and I took some of that too. And so I went home, and I got high that night, and I had lost my little bit of clean time, and I went to a meeting and shared about it. And the guy who sponsors me now, he had grabbed me after the meeting, and he said to me, "So you haven't surrendered yet, huh?" Well, I didn't know. I didn't know what he was talking about, and I kept using off and on. And I went back to jail a couple more times, and the third time I went to jail, I reached that stage where I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. Now, I went to jail on September 18th, 1998. That's my clean date. But I had been there for a couple of days or a couple of weeks, I don't know, in jail. Every day seems to be the same. I remember the day I went in. I remember the day I got out. The days in the middle were all just about the same. So I had been there for a little while, and one day I was looking out the window, and I seen this car go up the road that looked just like a car that belonged to somebody I had bought dope from. And I was locked up in that little cell, and I had an overwhelming physical desire to get high. There was nothing I could do about it. And I got down on my knees in that jail cell, and I prayed, and I said, "God, sick and tired of living like this. I want to try to live life clean." And that moment I'll never forget, because that was the moment of my facing my greatest fear. How was I going to do this? Drugs was my best friend. Booze was my best friend. How was I going to live without being able to alter my state? Scared and on my knees and asking for help. God answered that. God honored that prayer. He came in and helped me. I haven't had to use since. I like to talk about faith. I like to talk about faith in terms of the second and third step. I knew what happened. Again, I got out of Twin Lakes, and went back home, and I had been going to a couple of meetings, and some guy, I had maybe 2 weeks clean. Some guy took me to a meeting over in Pittsburgh, and I left the meeting. He was riding me home. He had had some time in the program, and I said to him, "Man, I'm all messed up." He says, "What's the matter?" I said, "There was 14 women at that meeting. I want to do them all." And he said, "Doug," he says, "you got to pray about that." Well, I was jammed up. I didn't know how to approach a woman, and I was sick and tired of making love by myself. And so I went home, and I prayed about it. And for me, that was my second step. I got it right there in that moment, because God lifted that lust off of me. Now, I'm a slow learner. And so it took me a year and a half to go back and pray and say, "God, I don't want to use anymore." But as soon as I did, the second step kicked in for me, and I've never had to use since then. And I got out of jail. I went to the mission, and I didn't know anything about God. I just knew that you guys had told me that if I wasn't praying, I wasn't staying. I had heard a guy share. He said he got clean. He was 48 years old. He was down on his knees praying, "Now I lay me down to sleep." And I can identify with that. I was 38 years old, and I'm living at a Christian homeless shelter, and I want to learn how to pray. I don't know how, but I knew that I was sleeping in a room with 20 guys, and I couldn't rest. I couldn't sleep. And so I got on my knees, and I prayed. I said, "God, please, just help me fall asleep and help me wake up feeling rested and refreshed." And that was the beginning of my prayer life. And I've been praying that prayer every night ever since, because God honors that prayer for me. He let me sleep. He let me rest. Now, I don't always sleep good. I don't always wake up feeling good. But on the nights when in the mornings, if I haven't had a good night's sleep, I get up, I get on my knees, I say, "God, I'm really going to need you today. And either gets me through the night or he gets me through the day. He's getting me through. That's all I know." I wanted to talk about faith. I know that what happened for me, I lived at the mission for 9 months. It was my safe place. It was my home. I didn't want to leave there. I had been there for 9 months. One day, a counselor walked in the office. He said, "Doug, well, where are you going to move to?" I said, I'm not moving. He said, yes, you are. I said, what do you mean? He said, we need a bed, and we've decided you're doing pretty good. It's time for you to move on. I was furious. I got to tell you, I almost used. My first thought was, I'll go get high. They won't throw me out. I'll get to stay another 6 months or so. That was my first thought. God kicked in before I found the dope man, and I was able to get clean. I got through that day. So now I couldn't get high to stay. I had to move out. And what did I do? I started going to meetings and sharing about it. People in my groups were laughing at me. They see me coming. They knew what the subject was. Where's Doug going to live? And so I'm talking about it, and I'm praying about it. And what happened was, after a couple of days, God did this for me. He gave me a vision. I remembered the movie. I don't know the name of it. It may have been Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade or something. I don't know. But anyway, it was the one where he's in search of the Holy Grail. And he finds that he has this guidebook, this map, and it tells him to go down this long pathway. He's got to leap over some tricky places where he had to step on the right letter. And then he gets down to the end of this tunnel, and at the end of the tunnel, he comes out and he's facing this huge canyon. You can't see the bottom of it. And the tunnel continues on the other side. And he knows he has to get to the other side, and the book tells him, take a leap of faith. The book tells him, take a leap of faith, and it shows a man stepping out. And I know what God's telling me. God's telling me, Doug, you're doing okay. It's time to trust me and take a leap of faith. And so I did, and I prayed, and I got a housing, and I moved out, and I was okay. It was okay. I didn't want to leave my safe place, but I had to. I had to move on in order that God could continue to bless me. I wanted to talk at this point about, I just love his story. It's one of them stories I tell all the time, but I love his story. It's a story about a man who was on vacation. He was visiting the Grand Canyon, and he was having such a wonderful time that he got up to the edge, and he accidentally stepped in, and he fell, and he was falling, and he knows he's going to die, and his life flashes before his eyes, and he's on the way down to the bottom, and his hands are going like this, and his legs are going like that. And just before he hits the bottom, he happens to snag a branch, and he grabs that branch, and he's holding on. And he's holding on. He don't know what to do. And he finally, he looks up, and he yells, is there anybody up there? And a voice from above answers him and says, yes, there is. And he says, what do I do? And a voice from above answers him, and he says, the voice says, let go. And he looks up and he says, is there anybody else up there? But the point of the story is, he was almost at the bottom. He was almost at the bottom. All he had to do was let go. God got him. But God couldn't help him until he let go. I just love that story. And so I've learned a little bit about faith. One of the things that helped me to see faith, my spiritual advisor, he's not one of us, but he's been a close friend and a mentor and a father figure for me and my spiritual advisor. And I heard him tell this story once. He talked about his daughter. He said his daughter was 5 years old. He said his daughter was walking down the staircase. He said he looked at her and he said, jump. He said it happened so fast, it scared him. He said his daughter never thought about it. He said his daughter never hesitated. He said his daughter just leaped from the bookcase, from her staircase. He said she jumped so fast it actually scared him, but he said there was no way in the world he was going to let his 5-year-old daughter hit the ground. He said he caught her. And he said when he thought about that, he says that's a little bit like his relationship with his God. He says he gets up in the morning and he walks downstairs and God tells him, jump! And he says, hi God, it's good to see you, but here's the stairs, I'm all right, I don't need you. And he doesn't jump. Today I've learned that God is telling me, jump, and I got to keep jumping. I got to keep jumping. Every day God tells me to jump, and I got to jump. He catches me every time. But here's the way my God works. You see, my God has given me the freedom of choice. He lets me make up my own mind. I don't have to jump. I can continue to use the staircase. It's all right with him. He don't help me, though. He won't help me. He tells me to jump. I got to jump. I got to jump, and I got to trust him. My spiritual My spiritual reference book says that without faith it's impossible to please God. And so I have to be faithful, and I have to trust God, and I have to pray, and I got to ask God for help. And the more I do, the more I feed that faith puppy. And the bigger he grows, and the easier it is for me to put my fears behind me. I wanted to talk just a little bit about my wife. I used to think that I was a good speaker until I started asking my wife to speak. And now I just do my own thing. She blows me away when I hear her speak. But I wanted to talk just a little bit about my wife. I met this woman about 18 months ago. And we started to go out. And we hadn't been together very long when she said to me, Doug, she says, if we are going to stay together, she says, I won't tell you her age, but I was 40-something. She said, if we're going to be together, you got to marry me. And I said, oh, now, I've never been married and had never thought about no marriage, and it scared me. It scared me. It scared me to make that kind of commitment. I asked her, please, baby, can you give me a little time? I'll go straight out as long as I can. She laid down the law. Let me think about it, I said. So one day, and my nature is to run. My wife explains to me about how fear-filled I am. She catches me in my fear. She catches me. She tells me, Doug, you're scared. I hate it when she tells me that. But she identifies these things that I don't know what's going on with me. She tells me, you're scared. And I need to know that and work on it. Now, what had happened, one day we had a fight. And I wanted to run. And we had a fight on a Friday night. And on Saturday, I was sitting thinking, I don't need this. I don't want to work it out. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to talk about it. I just want to run. And my brother Mark called me up. And as soon as I heard his voice on the phone, I dumped on him. I just went off. I can't believe what she did. And I can't believe what she said. Can you believe she did this? And can you believe she said that? And he let me go on and on and on. And when I was done, he said, well, Doug, he said, whenever I find myself in a relationship, he said, what I do is I make a list of what I want versus what I'm getting. I said, oh, thanks, Mark. And I hung up the phone and went to my wife and to my girlfriend at the time. I said, baby, I'm wrong. I'm sorry. I'll never do it again. It wasn't long after that that I asked her to marry me. Now, sometimes I call Mark up and I say, what'd you give me into? But it's been all good. The reason I married this woman is that she won't let me run. She won't let me run. She's got enough maturity that I don't have it. She sees me about to run and she stops me. And she says, well, she says, you know, we don't have to do it right now, but we're going to do it. And she helps me to face my fears and to keep stepping on through the things that I got to step through. I don't know. I think that's about all I got. It's sure been good to share tonight. I want to thank the committee for letting me share, and Lance for asking me to come down, and I want to thank my wife for her support. Thanks, bud.
Dad! I want to thank Doug again for sharing his experience, strength, and hope. I'd like to introduce our second speaker from Doug, from the Choice.
What'd you say?
Choice in Cannesburg. The Choice in Cannesburg group of NA.
Wow, what a tough act to follow. My name's Scott and I'm an addict. Hi, folks. I never know where and when to begin these things. I don't like speaking. Never have. Because I have this tendency to go brain dead. So if I have some long pauses or whatever, you know, my mind's somewhere else. Before I come down here, I took a long walk, and I was sitting up on top of the ridge up here just meditating a bit. And I looked up, and I was watching the sky, and I watched the edge of night roll in. And, you know, it was a pretty beautiful sight to see. And it's about awareness today for me, and trying to maintain that awareness. Where the faith comes from. You know, and I was hearing all the background noises. I was hearing all the noise and chaos and confusion, people walking up from the main meeting, car stereo is blasting, and I'm thinking, here we are coming away to be real, to get into a serene area, you know, to commune with God, and we're bringing all the noise and chaos with us. And it kind of struck me as an opposite of things. And it seems to be, you know, like my nature, I get caught up in that. I can take that pain and chaos wherever I go if I'm not open to the things that are around me. And that's real important for me today, is to try to maintain that level of openness. And I'm not always successful at that. You know, sometimes it's a daily struggle. You know, I was thinking when Doug was speaking, I just ought to come up here and say, you know, the solution to fear is faith, thank you, good night. Because that would be keeping it real simple. but that's like a cop-out, too. Because I was asked to come up and share my experience, strength, and hope. And when Lance asked me, there was a bit of fear that run through me. In the past, he'd asked me from every year from... since this retreat has started, if I could speak, but there was always something else going on. My work schedule didn't permit me to come up, or one thing or another, and this is the first year that he asked me, I was actually able to say yes. And he had us all cornered at the time. There was like five of us at one time he nailed. so there was peer pressure involved, too. Yeah, with the faith thing, I hate standing behind a podium. I really do. Because that separates me from you. And this is something, another wall I put up. Whenever I've been asked to speak at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting or have done public information going into the high schools, I removed the podium. I got up and sat down in front of everybody. Because that's where I should be. You know, I'm not up here elevated. I'm down with everybody else. And I recognize that we're not all in the same place at the same time. And that's cool, because that's diversity. And that's one of the strongest points of this fellowship. Is the ability for us to develop different faith systems and different understandings and beliefs and let them grow and expand. And when I hear those things going on and see those things going on in meetings, you know, it's just like totally awesome, because it opens my mind and it opens my belief system and understanding to new levels. And it enables me to grow. It's like when I go to a meeting, a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I'm full of fear and I'm sitting down in the beginning, if I had a bad day and I don't really want to interact with people, and I hear the topic going around, and the first time the topic is mentioned at a discussion meeting, my mind goes blank. You know, I'm trying to think of, what do I think about this? Where am I at with this? But as it's going around, people are stirring thoughts in my own mind. You know, I'm starting to relay. I'm starting to see things and pick things out. And I might not always agree with what I hear. And the things that I don't agree with just solidify the things that I do agree with. And it's that counterbalance. It's that diversity that enables me to grow. I was watching a movie one night. I don't get the opportunity too often to turn the TV on. Quite frankly, I don't really like TV all that much anymore. But there was a movie on I haven't seen for a long time, and it was one that I first watched when I first got clean. And there was this one scene in there that always made an impression on me, because it was a father talking to his son, and he was saying, without change, something sleeps inside of us and seldom awakens. And he said, the sleeper must awaken. And I had just come in the room set, you know, right around then, and I was going, wow, you know, there's been this shit sleeping inside of me for years, and the fear has been kept it buried down. And I can remember my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. A treatment center took me to it. I first started trying to get clean in 1977. And it wasn't until February 9th, 1992 that it stuck. I had gained some time. I was abstinent, but no real recovery. You know, I could come to meetings. I started doing the other fellowship, because I never heard of NA until I found my first treatment center. And I can remember going to that first meeting, Washington 1, and having to go to the bathroom so bad. It was the old Trinity Episcopal Church in the social hall, and the kitchens were in the back, and the restrooms were up in the front where the speaker was. And you had to walk past all these people to go up to the restroom. And I'm standing back here, I'm doing the potty dance. I don't hear a thing going on, and I'm so caught up in that fear, self-centered base, you know, that I'm thinking, well, man, I got to get up here. I got to go to the bathroom. Well, maybe I can duck around the corner outside. No, there's people standing out there smoking. They'll see me. And I said, well, if I walk up front and people see me going into the bathroom, they're going to know I'm going into the bathroom, as if that really makes a difference, you know. And I said, then I took a little step further. Well, if I do go in, I'm going to have to flush, because if I walk out and they know that I went into the bathroom and I don't flush, they're going to think I'm a real sick bastard. And then I took it another step. I said, well, if I do that, then I'd better wash my hands or at least turn on the faucets on the sink so they think that I washed my hands. So I went out there, you know, if I have to shake somebody's hand, they're not going to go, oh, shit, he was just in the bathroom and didn't wash his hands. That's the kind of fear I had when I first come into these rooms. And I can remember going in that treatment center and having a wallet, nothing in it, mind you, and putting it and sleeping it between, putting in between my pillowcase and pillow and sleeping with it at night, you know, for fear that somebody was going to steal it. You know, I didn't have nothing in there. I didn't have anybody else's credit cards in there. You know, I walked in there, I had two bags of clothes, one with dirty and one with dirtier. Every week I switched them. And I can remember my last days out here, the fear and the self-centeredness and the loneliness that just totally overwhelmed my entire life. Being on, Tim mentioned it earlier, yeah, I was on window patrol in a tent. That's where this addiction took me. You know, every time I heard a sound, man, I was peeking out, and that's insane. And I look at where I'm at today. I don't have to live that kind of lifestyle. You know, I'm comfortable today. I can whoop it out and piss right here and be fine. Not that I would, mind you. I've developed a little bit of tact since then. But it's okay, you know, and for me, like, faith, a lot of faith comes in hindsight. It's from looking at the experiences of the people in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous who have been through exactly the same thing as I have been through, and hearing them share on those things, and recognizing that, you know, I'm on that similar path. I might not be on the same exact path, because we all have different paths, but they got through it okay. And then after a while, developing a little bit of more time under my belt, and recognizing that every time I ever was in a pinch or whatever, things turned out all right. You know, if I look to the past, I see that God was always there. I see that people were always there and willing to help me. A lot of times that self-centeredness kept me from asking for help, and it was that fear. You know, this is a beautiful, wonderful program. And I had a lot of trouble with the third step at first, too. People were telling me things like, well, take your glasses off and shove them under your bed. You know, that'll get you down on your knees. And my viewpoint then, it still is I crawled on my knees for 25 years in active addiction. When I got clean, it was time for me to walk on my own 2 feet like a human being. For me, humility is simply being who I am. It's self-acceptance. And the basic text talks is about that. It's when I'm trying to be something that I'm not being humble. And the fear is coming in because then I'm trying to mask something and the faith isn't in place. And I had a lot of questions about my belief system when I first came into these rooms. I was raised a Catholic. I was the altar boy, the whole nine yards. You know, I used to make jokes about the fourth and fifth step, that when I had to go to the fifth step, I was going to go to the monastery like I heard a lot of other people do. I was going to walk in there and say, bless me, Father, for I've sinned. I killed my last confessor just to get him going. And I came to believe, you know, that I needed to do the footwork to find those beliefs in myself. You know, I had to look and search to find a sense of understanding that I could feel comfortable with. You know, and the basic text talks about that it just has to be loving and caring. And I did. I did a lot of footwork to do that. You know, I did went out and explored all these different avenues and tried to find that belief system within me. And today it served me pretty well. And I continue to let it grow. I continue to take in more information because I'll never have all the answers, because I'll never have all the questions. And it's funny, as that awareness grows, you know, I get a better understanding of all the steps I've worked before. And I see how they interplay in different areas in my life. And I start getting this awareness of, like, the whole circle of things, how life is just, how things work, in a sense. That, like in society, we tend to elevate folks to this level or that level and miss the whole interconnectedness, that the doctor is no better than the patient because one can't survive without the other. They're interconnected. That everything that we do you know, like I believe that I was given a set of natural skills and abilities inherent within me that separates me from every other human being on the earth. Now, other people have similar type skills, but nobody can do anything exactly the same way I can, and that's the true value. Just as nobody can do anything different from this person or this person or this person. And that's a wonderful thing. You know, and for me today, I think the greatest crime in the world would be for somebody to have the skills and abilities to unlock the secrets of, say, cancer and bring a cure to the table, but yet be working at Mickey D's going, "You want fries with that?" To me, that would be such a waste, and that's living in fear. And I don't want to live in fear today. I want to be able to explore all those things inside of me that the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous have enabled me to be able to look at, that my sponsor and support group encouraged me in, to see those things that I've become, can become. You know, when I get a little bit of fearful, I look around the rooms, and I see people, what they're doing with their lives. You know, I see this person over here, you know, they're going back to college and they're working on their master's degree. And I see this person over here has become a lawyer. You know, I see this person over here became a teacher. You know, I see this person over here started their own business. You know, and they're successful at it. And they're doing it in a loving, caring way. You know, and that just fills me with hope. And when I have that hope, the fear isn't there. And I just went brain dead. That's a fearful thing. So I guess that's a good place to stop then, if I'm going brain dead. I know, if you were walking along the top of the hill with me, you would have heard some fantastic shit that was running through my head before I come down here. But that's always the way it is. And it's like my sponsor tells me. He says, you know, not every awareness you get is meant for everybody else. Some things are just messages for you to learn from. And when I get in situations, that's important for me to realize. Especially when I'm dealing with newcomers. And last Thursday, I had the opportunity, somebody called me and asked me if I could take a pretty decent road trip away from my house and pick up somebody and take them to their first NA meeting. And I got such gratitude from that, because it took me back to that very first day when I was so full of fear and so full of guilt and so full of shame. And this guy cried all the way to the meeting, and he cried all the way back, you know. And I was like, whoa. I mean, that level of honesty, that level of openness at that point, you know. It's like getting clarity. I can get clarity on any issue I'm going through in life. Maintaining it is another thing. Because the disease will kick in, and it will get closed-minded again. And it's like that insanity thing, doing the same thing over and over again. When the pain gets great enough, we change. It's like holding on to the clarity today is important for me. And letting it grow and recognizing. You know, everything I ever thought was an answer when I first walked into these rooms turned out only to be an expanded awareness of a larger question. And it keeps me coming back. And I've had people tell me, you think too much. But, you know, every time I ever got into a trouble or a problem when I was out there using was because, not because I thought too much, it was because I didn't think enough. I always stopped short. I took that fear, easy way out. You know, cut and run, do the softer, easier thing, stop short of the spiritual solution. You know, and today it's important for me to think things all the way through and to find that spiritual solution. Because when I'm in that spiritual solution, I'm not in the fear. You know, in the rooms, too, we talk about all our spiritual principles like honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, patience, tolerance, trust, surrender. And the longer I stay around, the more I see that those are a solution to the fear. But I also recognize, too, that those aren't spiritual solutions at all. None of them are. There's only one spiritual solution, and that spiritual solution is love. Everything else is just a manifestation of it. When I'm patient, I'm expressing love to whatever I'm going through. When I'm being honest, I'm expressing self-love. When I'm being tolerant, I'm expressing love. It's just a facet of it. And it's a beautiful, loving thing. You know, it's like my friend Lance always says, you know, try to deal with things in a loving, caring manner. And I know that whenever I do that, the fear isn't present and things work out okay. I don't have my hands in there so much trying to manipulate and move this thing over here and this thing over there. The steps are in place and they're working for that moment because there's clarity there. That's what keeps me coming back. You know, I need to continually grow because I know every time in the past that I haven't, that I thought that I knew something more than what I do, because don't get me wrong. And I often hear people say, well, you know, I don't know nothing. Well, you know what? I know something. I just don't know enough. The longer I stay around, the more knowledge I gain, and the more I'm able to use that knowledge to apply it into my life, the more I need to take knowledge and apply it into my life. And that's a good thing. You know, today I'm not afraid of learning. I'm not afraid of getting that knowledge. And I love it when somebody calls me on my shit today. You know, because I know my support group is loving and caring. And they'll pull me aside and go, you know, Scott, I'm a little worried about you. You know, is there something going on? And it's a big difference because the folks I used to hang around with when I was using would come up and put the finger in the chest and, you know, say, well, where's my wallet? Kind of thing. But that's great not having to live like that today. And I'm definitely running brain dead, so it's probably time for me to shut up. So I'd like to thank the Lower Highlands Mountain Area Committee for asking me to speak, especially Lance, if he's out here anywhere. And that's all I have.
I'd like to thank Scott again for sharing his experience, strength, and hope. We have like a little bit of time left if anybody has willingness to share or, you know, talk about anything. I'd like to thank the speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. Can we have just for today at the podium?
Leading fellow nomadic named Eric.
Not that good.
Just for today. Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I'll be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
We form a circle.
Doug, can you take a shot, please?
Change, the courage to change things we can, and the wisdom to know that.